This is The Guardian.
I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story. The koala has officially been listed as endangered in Queensland, New South Wales and the ACT, an upgrade from the lesser vulnerable listing it's had for the past 10 years. This news, whilst alarming, has come with a series of promises by the federal government, with $50 million of funding and the adoption of a long-awaited plan to recover koala populations. But how did this iconic Australian marsupial become endangered in the first place? And what is the government's plan to save the koala? Today, the decline of the koala. It's Thursday, the 17th of February. Okay, Lisa, so koalas are listed as endangered. Firstly, just what do you think of this announcement and this moment?
It's a really long expected announcement. It's obviously a devastating announcement. I mean, the koala is basically our national animal when you think about how people internationally reflect on Australia's wildlife.
Lisa Cox is an environment reporter at Guardian Australia.
It's also an announcement that was very avoidable had we done the right things to prevent it.
You say it's long awaited. Let's get into that. I mean, how long has this been in the works, this endangered listing?
The listing of the koala actually goes back about a decade now. So the koala was first listed as a threatened species under Australia's National Environment Laws back in 2012. It was listed as a vulnerable species by the then Labor government and the Environment Minister at that time, Tony Burke. So at the time, Tony Burke acknowledged that the species faced serious threats from urban expansion and climate change. And he also identified that the koala required what is known as a recovery plan.
We've spoken about recovery plans with you before on the podcast, Lisa, but just to catch everyone up, what is a recovery plan?
A recovery plan is a document that exists in legislation that basically sets out the key threats to a species or a habitat and the actions that need to be taken to prevent its extinction.
So the Environment Minister said that the koala needed one over a decade ago. What happened?
Well, nothing happened. So the decision at the time that the koala needed a recovery plan came with a caveat that that recovery plan would kick in 2014, at which point a sort of previous national koala strategy was going to be expiring. But instead, the recovery plan was never developed. Then at the end of 2019, the Black Summer bushfires struck, an unprecedented disaster that was seen around the world, and not just koalas, but plants, animals, habitat across the board were devastated.
I mean, it's hard to remember, but the international concern about koalas specifically, but Australian wildlife, was incredible. It was the top of bulletins on the BBC, on international news.
With their burnt noses and singed paws, the confronting images of injured koalas have become an enduring sight of what Australia's government has called the Black Summer.
Personally, I was overseas in a remote town in Japan, and I had local people asking me, are the koalas going to be okay?
These images are seared into the nation's memory of fire season. Desperate animals struggling to outrun danger.
These images of burnt and starving koalas were seen all over the world, and it was absolutely devastating. WWF, I think it was, produced some figures estimating about 60,000 koalas were killed as a result of the fires. It's important to note that these are koala populations across the whole country. Those figures take in koala deaths on places like Kangaroo Island off the coast of South Australia, which actually makes up the bulk of the WWF data. And then there's, you know, larger estimates, you know, 143 million mammals killed, 180 million birds, 51 million frogs, 2.5 billion reptiles across the continent. You know, these are absolutely staggering figures. And of course, millions of hectares of land that was burnt. What we also know is that in 2020, a few months after the fires, a New South Wales parliamentary inquiry found that the species would be extinct in that state by 2050 unless governments took urgent action to protect its habitat and turn the declines around.
Mm. So did we see more of an effort and more action to protect the koala after this moment?
After the fires, three organisations who have been very active on koala protection for a very long time, Humane Society International, WWF Australia and the International Fund for Animal Welfare, put in a formal nomination for the koala to be officially listed as endangered rather than vulnerable. And what we've also seen is finally some action on the recovery plan for the koala. So the fires prompted consultation on a draft that went out last year, and then a final version was delivered to the Environment Minister, Susan Lee, late last year.
Right, so that brings us pretty much to the announcement. What exactly has the government announced and committed to when it comes to saving the koalas?
Well, look, there's been two really big announcements over the past month. So in January, the Prime Minister Scott Morrison and the Environment Minister Susan Lee made an appearance at the Australia Zoo Wildlife Hospital in Queensland.
We had a good cuddle with those koalas today, and they are such a symbol in so many ways of Australian wildlife.
At the zoo, as has become standard with any election announcement related to threatened species, you saw pictures of the Prime Minister cuddling up to a koala. And the government announced a $50 million funding package for koala protection, which they say is on top of previous commitments of $24 million.
And we're lifting that by a further $50 million today. And this is a commitment that is, it's already in the budget. It is there and the programs start.
So it includes $20 million for health and habitat protection projects, $10 million for community activities such as habitat restoration, $2 million to improve koala health, $1 million for koala care and treatment, and $10 million for a national koala monitoring program. And Lee said at the time,
it symbolises the practical environmental mission of the Morrison government, which is about doing things that count, doing them on the ground, doing them with communities, and actually seeing the results.
I mean, $50 million does sound like a lot of money, but is it comparatively when it comes to funding in this area?
In terms of an investment in a single species, it is a large amount of money because Australia's threatened species, they certainly don't get the funding that scientists have identified is needed to turn the decline of Australia's environment around. And then a few weeks later in February, Lee announced that the koala would be put on the endangered species list and that the government planned to adopt the long-awaited national recovery plan.
Do we know why these two announcements, one sounding quite positive involving millions of dollars of funding and one an incredibly bad headline involving a beloved international symbol of Australia being listed as endangered, were announced separately in this way?
As I understand it, the two things were originally meant to be announced together, but at some point, whether it's related to dividing up announcements or whether it's related to delivering good news first so that people know what you're doing before you hit them with the bad news, at some point a decision has been made to split the two things up.
Right, so let's step through this announcement, starting with the significance of this endangered listing, Lisa. Obvious first question, what is an endangered listing and what does it mean?
An endangered listing means that you are in danger of going extinct. Now, under Australia's environment laws, there's different categories for threatened species. You've got vulnerable, which means that you're at a high risk of extinction. You've got endangered, which is the status the koala has been given, which means you're at very high risk of extinction. And then there's critically endangered, which is a rung below extinction, and that means you are at extremely high risk.
What
does an endangered listing actually do, though, in terms of the action and protection that it involves?
The new listing, it lowers the threshold at which new developments are assessed for their potential impact on koala and koala habitat.
What does that look like?
Well, it means that your development is more likely to trigger the need for an assessment before it gets approved.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't destroy any koala habitats ever, this listing. Is that right?
That is correct. And welcome to Australia's system of environmental protection.
So the Environment Minister has said, in addition to this endangered listing, the government will adopt a national recovery plan for the koala, a plan that is about a decade overdue. But what is actually in this plan?
So far, I've only seen a draft, but it was a fairly detailed document. It's about 100 pages, and it sets out all of the things that you would expect to see in a recovery plan. So it looks at the distribution of the populations, it looks at population declines, it looks at the key threats. And there's two things that come through really clearly in this document, and they're interlinked problems, and they are habitat destruction and the climate crisis.
Can you break that down a bit, how these two different things impact koalas and how they are interlinked?
So obviously koalas need trees. If you cut down trees, you put pressures on the koala and other species as well. The removal of habitat exacerbates climate change because trees remove carbon dioxide from the air and release oxygen into the atmosphere. Mm. On the flip side, climate change also results essentially in the destruction of more habitat because changes in the climate reduce the areas of habitat that species can comfortably live in because some places will be too hot. It also increases the frequency and intensity of things that we know are threats to habitat, such as fire and drought. So these two things are feeding each other, two things that are all, by the way, driven by human activity.
Right, so that's the threats to the koala as outlined in the report, but what about the action that it recommends?
So recovery plans set out actions that governments, communities, NGOs, scientists can take to stop the continued decline of a plant or an animal. So some of these are really obvious things, like protect its habitat, and things like that are actually in the koala recovery plan. Now, in terms of legislation, there's no obligation on governments to actually implement recovery plans. So it does actually require a willingness on the part of Australian governments to actually do these things that are needed to save a species. Where legal effect of a recovery plan kicks in is that under national laws, a minister is not allowed to make decisions under the Act that are considered to be inconsistent with a recovery plan. But if a recovery plan has been adopted, then a minister, when they make decisions about developments, has to demonstrate that that decision is not inconsistent with the requirements of the recovery plan.
So to summarise, Lisa, this recovery plan doesn't legally bind the government to undertake any koala conservation at all, really, but it does have a legal mechanism that's supposed to prevent ministers from signing off on further destruction of koala habitat. I'm wondering how useful or powerful that mechanism is.
Well, we're still clearing habitat for critically endangered species. That have recovery plans. I mean, what you can say is that just because a species gets listed, just because a species has been identified as needing a recovery plan and maybe a recovery plan has been adopted, it actually doesn't mean that we necessarily take the steps that we need to save the species. It doesn't necessarily mean that we set aside habitat for protection. Sometimes those things get done, but it's not an absolute, and there's actually no obligation on governments to do any of this. The Act allows for a lot of ministerial discretion. So there's a lot of decisions that come down to the minister of the day. And if they can find ways to explain their actions while approving developments that actually increase pressures on a species, then the Act allows for that.
Mm. Right. A minister can just say, well, this is consistent with the recovery plan.
Yeah.
And who's to challenge them on that? You know, who has the power to really have that held to account and overturned?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is where, you know, decisions end up in courts and things like that. But having said that, I don't know that any decisions have actually ended up in court on the basis of a recovery plan before. You know, they'll say, look, I considered the impacts to the koala and I considered the recovery plan, but I'm satisfied that this will be sufficiently offset, for example, with, you know, protection of this habitat over here or this restoration activity. That's how these things get explained away under the Act.
With that in mind, how do you think applications for development in koala habitats will play out going forward now that the government has committed to this recovery plan?
I mean, recovery plans that I'm aware of almost never stop development, almost never. I mean, maybe there'll be, you know, modifications made or things like that. That sort of thing can happen. Occasionally a development gets rejected, but rarely. You know, there's always going to be applications for developments that are going to clear koala habitat. There's, for example, a quarry extension in Queensland that's being considered at the moment. That one's attracted a bit of community attention up there. There's, you know, proposals for a massive increase in housing in Sydney South that will affect, you know, the remaining koala populations of southern Sydney.
Next, why action to save the koala was delayed for 10 years. So, Lisa, it sounds like we'll have to wait and see what impact this recovery plan will have in the near future in terms of destruction of koala habitat. But I want to wheel back a bit and talk about why it took so long. It took over 10 years. We've had about 5 environment ministers, as you've written recently, in that time. Why did it take so long?
In the time that I've been reporting on the environment, this is just a really common occurrence. You know, it's not just the koala that was waiting on a recovery plan. It's nearly 200 other species that have been identified as requiring recovery plans that were overdue. Fewer than 40% of the plants, animals and habitats on Australia's threatened species list have a recovery plan. Then a further 10% of those have been identified as requiring a recovery plan, but it hasn't actually been developed. They've recently made a decision to actually scrap recovery plans for almost 200 species and habitats, in part because they've had this backlog of plans that were out of date, overdue, and there's a lot of work. There is an awful lot of work and time that goes into developing these documents.
Right. So facing delays and backlog, they're just scrapping hundreds of plans. This doesn't sound like a very well-functioning system here, Lisa.
It's not. And an independent, once-in-a-decade review of the system came to the same conclusion. There was a review of the Environment Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act, and the final report from that review was delivered to the government in late 2020. That review looks at the whole system and is supposed to diagnose problems in the system as well as looking at what is maybe working well. And what it found was that multiple Australian governments, successive governments for years, have actually completely failed to fulfil their duty to protect the environment. And the report gave a bunch of recommendations, 38, aimed at fixing that.
Hmm.
But the government's response to this report so far has basically been to try to deregulate the Commonwealth's role in environmental decisions and instead hand those powers over to the states and territories. This has been widely critiqued by environmental groups. Some have said the response so far has been basically an attempt to achieve less environmental protection.
Cut down on the green tape.
That's right, reducing green tape.
So set against all of this, Lisa, I'm aware it's just a really dire need for action on conservation that goes much broader than the koalas. I mean, are there other species that kind of deserve this level of attention that we're giving the koala right now?
Oh, of course. Overall, there are almost 2,000 species and habitats that are listed as threatened in Australia. And some of those are critically endangered, which is a notch not too far from extinction. And they're obviously in dire need of help. And for some of them, there's really active work happening, things like the orange-bellied parrot, but others, not so much. And, you know, we hear this time and again, but if you're what's considered a charismatic species, which the koala is one, you're much more likely to attract attention and funding and assistance. If you are something like a reptile or a fish or, God forbid, an invertebrate, it's a lot tougher.
Are you hopeful that the conversation and the action that's being announced right now will stop the koala from going on to the critically endangered and then even extinct list?
Oh, look, I absolutely hope so. And reading the recovery plan where they are talking about things like, you know, the need to really set aside habitat and protect it, yes, of course, like that has to inspire hope. You just hope that it's actually done.
That was Lisa Cox, an environment reporter at Guardian Australia. Lisa has written just so much on threatened species, and I do recommend our threatened species episode that we made with Lisa last year called Australia's Environment Laws: Are They About to Get Even Weaker? It goes into more detail on that review of the EPBC Act and the government's response. We've linked to that on the Full Story page. This episode was produced by Jake Morecambe, Karishma Luthria and Alison Chan. Sound design and mixing by Daniel Simo. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Muttignoni, Gabrielle Jackson and me, Laura Murphy Oates. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.